A wide range of crops are grown in Wisconsin, including corn, soybeans, potatoes, wheat, and cranberries. But could farmers and the state's soil benefit from additional crop diversity?
The Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in southeastern Wisconsin was created to promote sustainable, organic agricultural practices here in the state. Last year, it purchased a research farm near East Troy to experiment with crops that could improve soil quality and develop new markets for farmers. This is the first year with plants in the ground.
To learn which crops they're experimenting with and what the potential markets could be, we turn to Esther Durairaj, the educational director of the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. She is program director of the Wisconsin Women in Conservation Program. Esther, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
And Nicole Touches is the research director of the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. She oversees the institute's new research farm near East Troy. Nicole, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Nicole, when you look out at this research farm, how would someone be able to tell, you know, this is really a research farm and not maybe a typical farm you would come across in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. All research plots are pretty readily recognizable because it looks like you're growing flags. So there will be lots of straight lines of flags. We have very small plots where there are a lot of flags, and then we have larger plots, which are more on the order of like 30 by 50 or 30 by 100 foot long strips. But we are applying and investigating different crop management techniques in these plots.
Esther, why is it important to have a research farm?
So the research is important because we translate a lot of the things that we learn to the community. And for that, we need to be sure of what we are doing, especially with the crop production techniques, the soil management techniques. We try and do it in a kind of replicated, Nicole mentioned, we do it in a replicated manner over time, over 3 years, collect data. And then at that point, we are able to make a good recommendation to the producers. And so research is very important before we try and move the information to the producers.
And Esther, you know, corn and soybeans and alfalfa and, you know, other forage, these are such important crops to Wisconsin. Why is the Institute trying to get Wisconsin farmers to grow different crops?
Oh, having new crops is very important because farmers have a lot of crops to choose from, number one. And then we also see of late how this weather variations happen in Wisconsin. So it's important for them to have some drought-resistant crops, something that will grow well in a flood situation and stuff like that. And also, as an organization, focus so much on soil health. And so it's important in order to have a soil microbiome that's flourishing, that we have different kinds of crops that enable that microbiome, feed those microbiome, and also able to produce different protein content and gluten-free crops and stuff like that. So this is a choice for the farmers to choose. There's also this time factor, like the crops that's of shorter duration, longer duration, so that it fits right into the rotation and stuff like that. So it's very important to have crops to choose from.
When you talk with farmers, are they receptive to these new crops? What is the feedback like?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. I wouldn't say that they jump onto production. There are a few crops that people are more at a point where they're ready to adopt. There's a few crops that are interested and are coming to our farm to learn, to see how it's growing, how it's performing and stuff. But there are some crops that there is receptivity to grow on their crop, say like a buckwheat. A lot of this buckwheat has been imported from Canada. And so the local Midwest supply chain is very receptive to growing buckwheat locally. So that's a crop that's been flourishing here now.
Yes. Nicole, let's talk about some of these crops. And if you could even start with kernza, which I learned is a trademark name for a type of wheatgrass. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, boy. The kernza spiel. Yeah, I've been involved with kernza research since Late 2016, when I was doing my postdoc fellowship at the University of Minnesota. And the reason that we are working on Kernza is it comes from this dream of perennial agriculture, of converting some of our agricultural land in the United States, but also worldwide, into land that's not tilled, that's not worked up every year, that's not so disturbed all the time, to convert these really high disturbance systems that are vulnerable to soil erosion, water quality risks, fertilizer losses from land, to convert some of those annual crops to perennials, which largely mitigate a lot of those environmental risks that we take with annual crops. And we have to, because humans bred annual crops, you know, for the last 10,000 years. And the reason that they did that is because they are much easier to select for. They're much easier to breed and to realize rapid gains. However, that initial ease comes with all these other issues that we're now, you know, seeing with intensive annual-based grain systems. And so this perennialization dream is certainly not unique to me. It's been discussed for more than a century. But the Rodale Institute back in the 1980s, and now the Land Institute since the 2000s, have really taken up the mantle of perennial crop breeding. Hmm. And so they developed and released Kernza, which, as you said, it's the trademark name for the grain from intermediate wheatgrass, which is a perennial grass widespread throughout the western United States. It's extremely winter hardy, so we don't worry about perenniality with it at all. And it already has larger seed size than a lot of other perennial grasses, which is why it was chosen as a domestication target. And its seeds also taste good, which is hugely important for growing a perennial food crop.
We're talking about the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute's new research farm, what is grown there. Nicole Touches is the farm's research director. Esther Durairaj is the institute's educational director. So, Esther, when you're talking with farmers, connecting with them about Kernza or some other of these crops, how do you make that connection to encourage them to try them, to grow some of these different crops?
So the one thing that we ask them is to visit our farm when we have field days or other ways that they can always call us and talk to us about their questions. And then there's the multivariate benefits that we have noticed on our farm, like growing these crops in small parcels of land, growing crops in areas of low fertility sometimes. And there's places where this crop can grow for weed management, where like parcels of land are not grown. So you grow this, there's control of weeds while they get the grains. Then they also have like a forage for the animals during the fall and early spring. So these are the benefits that we talk about based on the experiments that's already been carried out and the data that has been collected over years. I think the Kernza farm in the crop in our farm is almost like 4 to 5 years old. So Nicole has been like collecting data over time. And then we kind of discuss about how it's actually performed. And so we have a research data-based information to pass out to producers.
Nicole, our next stop at the farm is the mung beans. How successful have mung beans been? Can you take us to this crop and what you're doing with it?
Sure. And actually, I might need to pass it to Esther, who is more of a mung bean expert than I. But Esther developed a relationship and collaboration with Dr. R.T. Singh at the Iowa State University. And they are doing mung bean breeding. And there is potentially a large volume market for mung beans because, as I understand it, they contain a protein that can be extracted that is a desirable protein for making imitation egg, which is kind of a, it's just super interesting. You know, they just happen to have this protein that can be extracted economically. And so there is a large facility that already exists in Minnesota or is planned to be built to convert this protein for this large scale imitation egg kind of supermarket food system ecosystem. But I think in more in alignment with our work and our interests at the Institute, mung beans are a fantastic food that they can just be eaten themselves. And so it would be a really wonderful food to bring to our local and regional cuisines to get that in. They have a lot of nutritional benefit. And I'll pass it to Esther quick to fill in.
Yes. Esther, what excites you about mung beans? And could, you know, this type of crop be direct to restaurants or grocery stores or in CSA boxes?
Exactly. This is a crop that's high in protein, that you have about 25% protein by weight. But what excites me is the multivarious benefits that it has. It's a legume crop, so it also fixes nitrogen in the soil. And so it's beneficial to the soil. It's beneficial to the human.
Wisconsin also really grapples with the nitrogen pollution. I'm wondering if this crop or another crop could help deal with that type of pollution, especially in groundwater?
Yeah, depending on the crop that you grow, you add a lot of nitrogen, right? Like corn needs a lot of nitrogen.
Yes.
While when you grow crops like legumes or cover crops, then they don't need nitrogen. So when a crop like green gram, that's called the mung beans, which is also called green gram, is grown, then your application of nitrogen is so very reduced. And so it's, then there's like, you know, there's no washout of nitrogen into the water and streams. But definitely that's also like, what do the farmers choose, right? They need to have a market for these. And there's huge potential. And I hear that there's a lot of potential already, that there's like a big market for it in Texas and places like that. So it's very important to develop a market for it in the Midwest as well.
I haven't tasted mung bean, Nicole. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how it looks, how it feels, how you might use it in cooking?
I think to me, they looked like smaller edamame beans. So a lot like a green soybean, or we were eating them. They were served to me sprouted, and they were absolutely delicious. But they're actually, Esther's been cooking with them for a long time because they're part of her traditional cuisine. So.
Esther, how do you like to use them in your cooking?
Oh, so there's a lot of ways in which we use that. We sprout and use that, which is one of, is very crunchy and nice, and it's got a lot of protein. We also wet soak it, grind it, and use it for making crepes along with rice. And then sometimes the flour, we use it for making goodies for kids because it's a rich source of protein.
Esther and Nicole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having us.
That is Esther Durai-Raj and Nicole Tauchus from the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute. That's a nonprofit that develops sustainable agriculture practices and recently opened a new research farm in East Troy. We talked about new perennial grains, those crops that don't have to be planted every year that could be economically beneficial for farmers and help to protect the environment.